This podcast is only for the attention of professional investors in the financial industry. Outer Blue by Amundi. Welcome to Outer Blue Convictions, market analysis and asset allocation views.
Hello and welcome to the March edition of our Outer Blue Convictions, the monthly podcast on the big themes dominating markets and their implications for investors. I am Giulio Lombardo, digital communication and strategy specialist, and I'm joined by Monica Defend, head of the Amundi Investment Institute. Monica, welcome back and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Giulio, and welcome back to everyone listening to us today.
So, Monica, we've seen the gains in the Magnificent Seven stocks in the US, and the rally has since broadened to other sectors, with both US and European equities setting record highs in March. What's been driving stocks, and how much longer do you think they can keep going up?
Well, there has been a list of factors that have been pushing equities up, starting from the idea that the central banks will cut soon, likely in June. And this is obviously well received by the markets and probably is the most important expectation they have. Besides, the economic data have been surprisingly good, in particular in the United States. We see some cooling in the economy, but honestly, we don't expect a crack in the economy, just probably a sequence of mini cracks. Momentum remains strong. And last but not least, earnings expectations has been lifted higher on the back of the good reporting season. Probably expectations are a bit too high when referred and compared to our own calculations. So sentiment remains tactically supportive for risky assets, but valuations are dirty expensive. So they are really stretched. And this is probably the main reason for us to prevent for any structural risk on position for the time being. In particular, in the tech sector, valuations are excessive, and in the broader market, the extremely bullish sentiment again leave us remaining cautious on the cap-weighted Standard & Poor. Any negative news with respect to growth data, for example, related to cooling consumption on the household sector or higher inflation, this could really generate a slight correction in the equity market. So if this any pullback relates to short-term upside surprises on inflation and the growth story remains intact, this could provide an entry point for tactical reasons. So all in all, we remain positive on quality value. We prefer businesses that are running operational efficiencies. And we have a kind of a balanced barbell stance where we like defensive names, but look for idiosyncratic investment cases. And we agree that industrial valuations are expensive. High quality materials, though, is the most attractive subsector in the industrials.
Monica, you mentioned just now about the macroeconomic picture in the United States. Let's stick with that just for a moment. I was hoping you could expand a little bit on your expectations for both growth and inflation in the US, and also, when do you think the Federal Reserve can start cutting rates?
Well, when it goes to the economic projection, obviously, the data released so far led us revising up our U.S. growth forecast just because the U.S. consumer and government spending have been largely contributing to the uplift. Having said that, moving forward, we expect inflation to continue its progressive nonlinear slowdown, probably helped by a moderation in demand led by a shift in the consumer sector due to lower consumption and progressively eroding the higher savings buffer in the hands of the U.S. consumer. The labor market is key. So the jobless rate rose in February, almost to 4%, 3.9, the highest level since January 2022, and wage growth slowed. So the majority of payroll gains are coming from non-cyclical sectors. We expect the Fed, as we were for a while now, to start cutting rates in June, with inflation progressively normalizing. And this should be the main reason justifying the rationale for easing. When compared to the market, I have to say that our expectations are a bit more benign, but we acknowledge that there are some risks on the June timing of the first rate cut, just because inflation might not fall as expected.
And what about other central banks? Do you think they're on their own path, or are they perhaps waiting for a signal from the Federal Reserve?
Well, when it goes to the ECB, statistically and empirically, the ECB has been following the Fed. Now, we really think that the ECB should look at the domestic condition and work on its own. The ECB turned a bit more dovish after the release of the inflation forecast. The risk stays with the labor market, and this is the reason why we expect the cut to start in June, when the salary bargaining will be closing. Moving into to the Bank of England, inflation in the UK is on track. We do expect 125 basis point cuts this year. The fiscal package that has been recently announced honestly hasn't changed our view on the macro front, and it is not coming as a game changer. Last but not least, the Bank of Japan that closed the era of the negative rates policy. There is some confidence on inflation front that has been boosted by the wages negotiation. However, the bank did not point out this may indicate a new rate hiking cycle. So as we expected, there is no forward guidance at the moment.
And how is this view on the monetary policy path that you've just painted for us affecting your views on global fixed income markets?
Well, first of all, the fixed income markets have been characterized by some volatility, mostly related to the hot prints on the inflation front. But because we think that inflation will progressively normalize, this will be really the main driver of the policy action. So all in all, we remain positive on the US duration on a long-term perspective, as honestly, the risk-free yields are attractive, but we are still very active and agile. Moving into Europe, we upgraded to neutral the duration position due to the recent lift in yields and the more dovish messages coming from the ECB. On the JGB, on the Japanese government bond, we remain short while we are slightly positive on the UK duration. Moving to the credit spectrum, fundamentals remain strong on the IG sector, while we are seeing some increase on the default rates in the low-rated credit in the United States, in the small and medium enterprises. Therefore, we see this is a story of higher fragmentation. Our focus, therefore, remains on quality, even though we are shifting down the issuer maturity curves. Looking into Europe, we continue to favor IG over high yield, and we maintain a preference for higher quality BB, even when it comes to low-rated issues. At sector level, we like financials and subordinated debt.
So let's switch focus for a moment, just because another big story this month has been that of gold, which has been very in demand, climbing to new highs earlier in the month. What's going on here?
Yeah, well, this is the $1 million question for the month. Honestly, there has been a lot of factors that have been playing the direction upward of gold, but honestly, they do not exhaustively explain the speed of this movement. So in the factors, we can list the geopolitical uncertainty, the risk of rising debt, the movement also on the positioning of speculative funds, but we think really that the rally has gone too far, and that probably there could be a pullback in the near term. In the meanwhile, we upgraded our target for gold on a 12-month horizon to $2,300 per ounce.
So, Monica, to finish off, I'd also like to ask you your views on emerging markets, and especially maybe with a focus on India and China.
Well, India continues to shine. The last quarter GDP growth surprised to the upside, 8.4%. We think, therefore, that the Indian economy can close the year with a 6% GDP growth led predominantly by strong domestic demand. In China, this year fiscal target deficit at 8.2% won't be sufficient to revive demand, even though it is bigger than the deficit we had last year. So we stick with the view of this 3.9 GDP growth for the year, which is below consensus and even below the government forecast. But we realize that weak consumption means CPI inflation should stay low, and the excess manufacturing capacity could weigh eventually on profit margin. More general for emerging market equities, we maintain the bottom-up approach that we've been playing so far. Therefore, we combine idiosyncratic stories at country level, mainly related to financial, to external vulnerability and fiscal risk. And on this basis, we maintain our positive view on India, Indonesia, South Korea, and some countries like Brazil and Mexico in Latin America. Looking to emerging debt, obviously, when the Fed will start cutting rates, this will be supportive for the asset class. Besides, continuing disinflation in the emerging market and attractive yields are also will likely keep investors interested in hard currency and local currency debt. However, we need to be mindful of the geopolitical tensions in Middle East, along with US and China tensions and idiosyncratic factors. So there is really the need to stay vigilant.
Very clear. Monica, thank you so much for joining us and for all your insights.
Thank you.
And thank you all for tuning in to this episode of the Amundi Conviction Podcast. We hope to see you next time.
This podcast is only for the attention of professional investors, as defined in Directive 2014/65/EU, dated 15 May 2014, as amended from time to time on markets and financial instruments, called MiFID II. Views are those of the author and not necessarily Amundi Asset Management SAS. They are subject to change and should not be relied upon as investment advice, as a security recommendation, or as an indication of trading for any Amundi products or any other security, fund units, or services. Past performance is not a guarantee or indicative of future results.